When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're back. We're better than ever. I don't know if that's true, but we are back. Bo Rude, Nick Baugh. Another coffee pod. I give you the red mug for Huskers, for Husker football.
I think I like that.
You think you like that?
Yeah, I do.
You're going to pander to people. You know, that's what we're doing here. So, little coffee time. It's Wednesday morning.
We're sobering up in the world.
We are.
I've been drinking a lot.
You're shocked. Drinking once a week is like, oh, boy, you know.
Kicking our butts, but
kicking
it is
our butts,
it is, you know? 10 o'clock on a Wednesday here.
Yeah, so again, we can repeat everything we talked about last week. You drink before noon on a Wednesday, you got to chickity check yourself or your Barney Gumble. And if it's wine, that's not gonna be great, you know.
Good. What can I ask you a question? What kind of coffee is this?
Well, this is Beanery Coffee, a proud sponsor of the Chick and Nick podcast.
Oh, yeah, how about that? Where are they?
Ashland
from?
Gretna Papillion, my friend.
Okay.
And they're opening one in West Omaha.
It's a nice flavor there.
This guy just wants, all he wants in his reads, his name's Paul. He wants me and Chick just be idiots on the reads. So it's great. So it works out very nice. Hey, by the way, shout out to GoCurrency for supporting this podcast. By the way, you were probably fast forwarding through the commercials on Saturday. There's a GoCurrency commercial on during the Nebraska football game.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, I was excited. I was very, very excited. Can I, before we get to the song and a bunch of different stuff, can I read an email I got?
Yeah.
Or actually, it's a Facebook message. This is from Tegan. I don't even know Tegan, but Tegan sent me a message. How about this? Nick, just wanted to let you know how much I enjoy the podcast. It sounds cheesy, which it is, but you and Bo have reinvigorated my love for Husker football, which was fading hard over the last few years. It never hurts to be reassured that you're doing a good job. So I just wanted to reach out and let you know that you're killing it. I'm telling every Husker fan I know to check out the Nick Baugh podcast. Keep up the good work. Cheers.
How about kind that? Words. That's awesome to hear.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, very nice.
And you know, so I got that message and it got me thinking about, I think, no, it's early. It's still fresh. We're off the Scott Frost firing. But one of the things I was nervous about is like, man, if Frost gets fired, I was nervous that my interest would and excitement and all that around Husker football, I was nervous that would plummet a little bit. Not plummet, it would never plummet, but like it would really dwindle or fade, as Tegan put it. I feel as intrigued and excited as it hasn't impacted it as much as I thought it would.
But that's your answer. So that's the answer that we all were debating after Mike Riley got fired. It's like, and Scott Frost gets the hire.
Right.
And we all said, if this doesn't work, if it doesn't work with Frost, it's over. That was the statement. And I think we all know how wrong we were.
Right.
Where the thing about Nebraska football, the thing about it, which we love, it transcends coaches. It's like it's in your blood. It's in our way of life. It's closer to religion around here than it is not. So
right.
Like it is. It's going to be there no matter what. So I think that's the part that we all probably are understanding right now, is like, we don't want Nebraska football to go away. So if we all care, which I know we do and the people listening to this show do, it's going to be around. I mean, that's the way I see it. I was actually at the Big Red Breakfast up in Omaha with Dirk Chatelain last week. And that was one of the questions that kind of came up, was around like,
Excitement.
Yeah. Like, are people still going to care? Like, is there a future where people don't love Nebraska football? And I said, I just don't think so. I think it's a way of life. And as long as the fans still care, like, we'll always have an upper hand compared to other programs. And we have something that they just don't. And it's that.
I think the only part of the people caring that is scary are the kids growing up. That of what does growing up with having never seen a win, like one of our best friends, Willie, his son, Jackson, he's God, Jack's got to be about 10.
Yeah.
He's literally never seen Nebraska football really be good.
No.
That's the only, I would say that's the concern.
You know what I mean? This is where it might, like, so the worst case scenario might take not 10 years,
right?
Not even 20. It's more like 40 to 60 years, because I think the generation that's now young, they're still going to know, like, their parents cared, right? And their parents are only, you know, between 25 to
40,
40 yeah. to 60, whatever, yeah. right? Those people are going to be around a long time still caring.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and like, you, guys yeah. like us, we got another 20, 30, 40 years of, like, we're right. still going to be good fans. But it's like, once you get through that, if we've never won, those kids and their kids, like, that's the problem. But the people that are our age and older, like, we're in. It's over.
Yes.
We're done. You right. got us.
Yes,
you
hooked us. I just don't know. Obviously, there's literally nothing Nebraska football could do
They've
that would
it.
Turn me away. Like, they, you, it's 20 years now.
Your wife's cheated on you 100 times.
Yeah, I'm
times.
Like, baby, come back. That's what
I'll
it is.
I'll always take you back.
Just come back to me. It's yeah. fine. It's no big deal. We're fine. We'll get over it. It'll be fine.
We're married for life. That's how I yes. feel about Husker. We're married.
It's yes. done. Right.
But, like, now the kids that are, you know, they're, that's another story. I do think they see their parents and the community. That's a big part of what they'll see and want to be a part of. But it's generation after them. It's yeah, like two right, generations.
So right.
This might sound crazy to think 40 years away, but like, it's like 40. I see the problem in 40 years. If we don't win, I don't see it in 10 years. In 10
it.
Years, Nebraska football is going to be fine.
I love it. I'm like genuinely excited and to see who Trev's going to hire, what that's mm-hmm. going to look like, you know, and then there is an excitement about the honeymoon phase of a new coach and then a new yeah. staff and a new player, you know, like, I'm excited about all that stuff. But I mean, I don't know. I just, Tegan's message got me thinking about that of yeah. like reflecting on my own, like, well, I, and part of it was probably a defense mechanism of like wanting Frost to continue to be the guy, where I was like, if you fire him, it'll, everyone will,
where will we go? Right. Where will we go?
Right. That's what it felt like.
We'll go somewhere. That's the, yes. you know, the answer is
we'll figure it out.
Go somewhere else because yes. we're not done with Nebraska.
In my mind, it was like when Forrest Gump started running and then just stopped in the highway and said, I'm pretty tired. I think I'll go home now. And everybody else is like, well, what are we supposed to do now? You know, like,
that's what
that,
you thought.
I felt like I was running. I was chasing Frost. Like, we're just going to go. I'm going to go with him. And if he got so fired, good. I'd be in the middle of nowhere on a highway and be like, what?
Scott
what?
Frost is going to talk. Hold on. Scott Frost is going to
say
talk.
Something.
He's going to say something.
Pretty tired.
I'm tired.
They got to go home now. Incredible. What a scene.
Oh, God.
What a scene. We had a lot to talk about today. I wish today was super organized. I kind of just wrote down a bunch of stuff that I'm just going to throw at you.
Okay.
We don't have like one major thing we're going to get into. I do want to shelve the whole Big Red Breakfast and some of the, because like I got some questions with that. But do we want to do the song now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's song it up. Song of the day gets us rolling, gets us going. We're doing it every week because it's fun. It's a good time. Bill's getting a roll in here. Let me turn this mug up.
Ready?
Okay. I mean, I think so. Do you want to? You just, I mean, I always have some like Casey Kasem. Like, in this next hit is from
this next hit, Casey Kasem. It's been on the charts for 3 weeks, and Nick Baugh loves this band.
No, so I've been listening to this album on repeat. So I've got some lyrics that we can find some meaning, but really I just wanted it because it's kind of a smooth Wednesday morning type of song right now. So,
okay. You better get your headphones on, dude. I don't think I know this song.
Well, you'll know the guy soon.
Wow, I feel like I'm on a cloud.
Nick, let me tell you, my brother, it is Wednesday morning.
This is a Wednesday morning song.
Blue skies for today. Don't need no more lonely nights.
Is this
all the black
Daryl?
Daryl.
This Daryl?
It's on the new album, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they made me see the light.
life. Oh,
Daryl.
Down in that we're always dreaming.
Wow.
I'm gonna dream the love to grow. Oh, I think the sun was in my eyes. But this time, the time won't pass me by. Lucky on the second try.
Lucky
on the second try. This time, the time won't pass me by.
Oh, okay. I think maybe there are...
Feel so lucky, babe.
Okay, what's this song called?
Time just passed me by.
Another try. Oh, yeah. When love comes calling, tears stop falling. Hey, I believe I know the reason why. Though I gave your love away.
Wow, this is a deep track.
Made me see. Oh, I think the sun was in my eyes. But this time, the time won't pass me by. Lucky on the second try.
I'm
looking at the lyrics right now.
Yeah, I got a couple of songs. I was like, oh, I could play any of these. I've been listening to this album, Nick, on repeat for the last week. So I don't know what happened.
Is it Marigold Sky?
Marigold Sky is the album, and there's like five songs that are just tremendous. But this one, I was like, okay, this is a good Wednesday morning song.
That's a smooth song.
And I was like, okay, could I find? So I started looking at the lyrics, and I was like, all right, yeah, you got lucky on the second try. Down and out. I don't know. I just felt like there was some
there was a little like, Nebraska football.
There's
in there?
A little Nebraska football in there, so it's just kind of like I was like, this
yeah.
Is a
good one, I think, so. I see the sunlight in your eyes, but this time won't pass me by. Lucky this, on the second try.
Yeah, this but, time the time won't pass me by.
Yeah. Okay. This is good. Wow.
Yeah. So, okay. But yeah, this I don't know what it is about that album. Like sometimes you stumble on an album where you're just like, every song is hitting right. Like it's
right.
been. It's been like a week where like I'm like I'm gonna listen to something else. I'm like,
I'm not going back.
I'm that's something you usually do.
Oh, I play
if
the
you
shit
are
out
an
it.
Obsessive.
I'll play a song
if
over
you
and over.
Find
and over.
A song,
yeah. Right.
You will play it basically on repeat for a month.
Yes, right.
And I'm usually like a guy like I get into a song an album and then I go I'm gonna save it so it's fresh. Man, I've been on this album just like crushing. Straight through every
well there's
every
nothing
night.
There's nothing more exciting and this gets harder and harder as you get older because you stop really I don't want to say you stop it gets harder to like new music. I'm just convinced new music is for younger people. It just is. I don't know, that could be a whole nother podcast, but it's when you find a song or an album from the past that you've never heard before.
Yeah.
It's so exciting. There's nothing more exciting than finding a new song that you love.
It's one, it's amazing, but two, like I this is a new album though. This is their newest album.
See, I don't
this is their 20 it says 2022.
Does it? Because this says it was released in 1997.
Right there it does?
Yeah.
Maybe my Spotify's wrong.
Maybe it's got like sometimes they re-release.
That's the part with them, it's hard to tell because they're Hall & Oates, like they've had songs out from the 70s through the 2000s, so it's kind of like I wouldn't know if they've done that. I just know that my Spotify says this is their new album.
Yeah, so Rock and Roll Hall of Famers and legendary duo Daryl Hall and John Oates are reissuing Marigold Sky, their 15th studio album and their first to be released as independent artists back in 1997. The album will be re-released on March 25th, 2022.
It's a 1997
re-release.
Okay. Wow. I thought that was like a new song. I was like, wow.
Well,
Hall & Oates,
but 97 is pretty late for them.
That's actually late for them. But yeah, it's like, it's hard for me to tell like the transition of their music, like where they're at. I wouldn't know.
September 17th, 1997, apparently is when.
Okay,
is,
good. Nick, wow. Good research. But
well,
yeah,
I mean,
I just was going off Spotify. I was like, well, it's their new album.
Yeah.
Like,
well, if it says 2022,
it must be a new song.
Technically it got released again in 2022, yeah. But I'm not fully sure what that actually means.
Usually they
but,
have it by the date it originally yes, comes out on, right. On your Spotify. Right. And then they'll show like a re-release, like a, you know, right. You know, a certain version, but
there is nothing, there's nothing more. So that's a great song. That was good. That there's nothing better than finding a new, and it's hard though, especially for an old group or an old singer that you love, like to find some new song that you've never heard before is almost is seemingly impossible.
Well, you know? I was curious to, cause I've kind of known all the Hall & Oates hits right through the years. But you played that one for our first song.
Right.
And I go, I had never heard that song. Right. So I started to kind of like, I'm going to dive in there to some of their older albums.
Right.
So I started doing that. And that's right.
They have 15 albums.
Yeah. When you got 40 years,
it's true.
It's like you every couple years you'd put one out.
Oh man, I still shout out to me and you going to see them in Omaha.
That was amazing. That's part of the why it's fun for the shows, because that is like one of our great nights.
Just an incredible night. Yeah. Just an incredible night. You ready to dive into some hard hitting stuff?
Let's do it.
So I want to start with this because this happened yesterday. Again, we're taping this on a Wednesday. A Lancaster County judge ruled the University of Nebraska must disclose the metrics mutually agreed upon between Frost and Trev. Everybody knew about the mystery metrics. What is that? For Frost to basically get his old contract back, he'd receive a one-year extension and get $1 million back to get to $5 million.
Yeah.
So it was always like, okay, what are those metrics? Remember, it had till October 1st was the date and all that stuff. And once the judge ruled, Trev went on the radio last night and just kind of like offered it up.
Yeah.
And the metrics were simply win 6 games, make a bowl game. That was it. Trev went on to say that he preferred, paraphrasing here, he preferred that it would have, that this would have remained a verbal agreement, but apparently Frost wanted something in writing.
Okay.
It is important to note that these metrics did not guarantee that he would be retained, but I think we all kind of, I don't know. Your reaction, do you have any? To me, when I read this, I was like, this was exactly what I always thought it was. You and I were always in lockstep, as we usually are. That like, I always thought the number was 6. The number was 6, get to a bowl game. Ken doesn't guarantee he's coming back. But I never bought into the whole idea that someone like Sip was pushing. And the fact that Sip,
8, wasn't he?
Sip was pushing 8. Now, the thing about Sip's, I would classify Sip as like a coach defender.
For sure.
You know what I mean? Like if, you know, there's certain guys that are ready to pull out the bazooka and just eviscerate people. Sip's reluctant to do that. So the fact that he kept pulling out that number 8, he wasn't just pulling it out because that's his nature. So he was getting that from somewhere. I just disagreed with it. This somewhat validates that. What's your reaction to it?
Oh, I think that, I mean, I 6 wins just seemed like the number because we'd never gotten to 6.
Yes.
So a guy like Trev, who I think he doesn't seem like a guy that wants to paint himself into a corner, like himself into like a,
yes.
If you don't, like he wants to keep his options open. So his option being open is I don't have to retain you, but if I like what you're doing, you get to 6, this shows like a positive, you know, right. It's like a positive reward essentially to get to 6. So, I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, it checks the boxes, bowl game, 6 wins. Like,
right.
I think that's fans would have, that'd been their bare minimum. Like, you got to do that to keep us happy. And it gave Trev the options he needed, but we never even got there.
I don't want to be, it's easy to say this now, and I don't want to be a hypocrite because I was the one that I was pushing. You just get to 6. If Frost gets to 6 wins, he's good. He's coming back. But now that we know what has unfolded and Frost has been let go, is it illuminating to think about that and say it out loud? That like year 5, all he had to do is get to 6 wins and he's coming back. Like, was it in some ways, I'm just asking the question, is like, is it embarrassing that it was that low, or do we have to always remember the time and place of what the current state of affairs was?
Just correct me. The contract stated you get your money back if we choose.
We reinstate
your money if you hit these metrics.
So the way, yes.
I don't think it's, but see, that's where Trev didn't paint himself into you will get retained.
It never. Yes, that's why it's important to understand.
That's the most important part is like, this is a contract negotiation with Frost. Be like, you take a pay cut and we're going to give you your money back if you do the bare minimum and we decide to keep you.
Right.
So that's a win for the University of Nebraska. But you know what? They didn't even care. Right. Like they didn't even give him through the date. So he got more of that buyout, essentially.
I know that's why I don't know, because it's hard now, because I'm not sure if in some alternate universe, if Frost doesn't get fired after the Georgia Southern game, is Nebraska, did Nebraska beat Indiana and beat Rutgers? Like it's hard to know.
It's too hard to know. People say we wouldn't have. How do you know? How do you know?
Right.
Like, you don't. That's a game we can't play. All we know is that like Mickey had the job. Mickey is 2-2.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, you see it, you read this stuff and it's not too terribly surprising, but I think it's hard to have perspective when you're in the midst of it. And it's also maybe a little irrational to set the bar so high where that's why I just, you know, sipping like got to get to 8 wins. It's like, this is a program that had, you know, 4 straight losing seasons and it just won 3 games. Are you setting some unattainable number? Because if you're setting an unattainable number, you might as well just fire him.
No, to me, like 8 was attainable with this schedule. And now actually the way the Big Ten West has played out, like we should be kicking ourselves so badly about that Northwestern loss. And
Georgia Southern.
And Georgia Southern. So, I mean, that right there, we would be at, 2, 3, 4. We'd be at 4.
4-2.
If we'd be in Northwestern, we'd be 1, 2, 3.
You're only
losing.
We'd
be at 5 wins.
We'd be at 5-2.
Call 5-2 right now. And
so then you'd say to yourself, like, getting to 6 seems like it would have. Everything's been kind of a disaster, and it's still potentially
attainable.
That's
why there was a change. There's a change because those are games you have to win those games. You can't do what we did. Not in year 5. You cannot do that in year 5.
Right. Because it does show you he just wanted to see improvement. He wanted to see Trev's line is I got to see incremental progress.
Yeah.
He wanted to see 6 wins in a bowl game. It shows you how dire things were that was Trev's. That's what Trev wanted to see, and Trev still 3 games in was like, this, we're done.
Yeah, but see, that's the part of it that, like, because they didn't have anything else tied to it, it's like, Trev didn't even need to worry about it. It was like, that was...
Right.
It was 3 games in the season. He knew his answer, you know?
Yes.
So...
Yeah, it's... I don't know. It's almost, interesting to get it, but at the same time, you get it, and it's a little anticlimactic, because you're like, it's kind of what everybody thought it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I guess that was my reaction to it.
And it didn't even factor into things after 3 games, you know?
Right. Yeah. So I know it's weird. It was everybody wondered throughout the offseason, what are the metrics? And now that you get it, it just feels anticlimactic because of Frost is already gone and the fact that it was what everybody kind of thought it was. All right. Nick Bob Podcast is powered by H&H Automotive. I want to tell you about the Onyx dealership in Omaha, located at 150th and Dodge. Onyx won the Best of Omaha number one luxury car dealer award. How about that? You win the Best of Omaha, you do your thing. Offering the industry leading brands like BMW, Jaguar, and Land Rover. I was looking at the Onyx website. In fact, I pulled it up right here. I'm not going to lie, Bo Rude. I think a white Range Rover is kind of my dream car.
Is it?
Isn't that like, to me, it's just a beautiful car. Like, it's a beautiful looking car, and I've never been inside of one, and I'm looking at it right now. The interior looks incredible inside. But speaking of other, so I said Land Rover, they got Jaguar. Didn't your mom, I loved your mom's BMW. That thing seemed like a smooth car.
They're super smooth. I also have a friend that has one, a current one, and they're roomy too. Like, they're extremely roomy. And as a guy who, like, I rode the back seat, like the knee room, I was blown away by.
You're right. Your mom's car was big for not a big SUV type of thing. Like, it was a sedan.
It's a big sedan, but now they have sedans and the SUV Beamers. But
yes,
man, dude, hey,
BMW's fantastic. Your boy, one day. One day I'll be in a white Range Rover. Okay, just one day it's going to happen.
So that's dream.
You understand?
Car.
Okay, that's the dream car for me. How about this? You want another reason to go there? Onyx offers a bottle of wine with any vehicle purchase. I swear to God, that's true.
So you're telling us we do a wine pod and they offer bottles of
wine? I'm just telling
you. I think we need to go there, Nick.
Just telling you that's what happens, okay? You can experience it for yourself at 150th and Dodge or online at onyxautomotive.com. That's onyxautomotive.com. Drive Onyx, the new standard. Can I have a bunch of Mickey Joseph thoughts. Can I just pepper you at
let me hear.
Wrote some of this stuff out, and I want you to kind of react to it. Because one of the things we got into was the reaction to this Purdue loss and kind of the psychology of the fan base and the psychology of people assessing Mickey and how many people clearly want Mickey to be the guy.
Yeah.
And I just simply started like, okay, I wonder what that is beyond just like, oh, Mickey, everybody wants to root for Mickey. He's a likable guy. I think it's twofold. I'm going to try a bunch of different things, but I think the first thing is I don't think there is a no-brainer home run candidate out there.
Yeah.
I think we have to start with that. There wasn't like a Scott Frost sitting out there in 2017 where you're like, you know, you're rooting for Riley to lose.
Yeah.
Because you want, not only you didn't believe in Riley, but you wanted Frost.
The hometown kid is going 13-0 right in front of our eyes, and we might have a chance for him. I mean, it wasn't just obvious. It was like, that's it. You know, yes. It was like, you know it.
So I think there, Mickey, it's kind of like, you know, the psychology of there's door number one is a guy, you know, Mickey Joseph, a former player. You've seen him wear the hat a little bit.
Yeah.
He's won a couple of games. There's a little bit that, you know, with that. And then behind door number two right now is a lot of intriguing candidates for people that everybody's like, they're dragging their feet on some of these guys a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think maybe somewhere there's that. And then I think on like a simple level, there's fans want to root for, they want to root for their team. They want to root for Nebraska to win. They want to root for Nebraska to be good. And for all those things to happen, Mickey would have to be the head coach moving forward. So on some weird level, you almost mentally paint yourself in a corner where you have to root for Mickey to be the guy because you root for Nebraska to win. And for the first thing to happen, the second thing would have to happen. Does that make sense? I know I'm getting real deep on a Wednesday morning here, but
yeah, I guess for me, I think on one of your points about this unknown almost, right? So to me, I think it's almost where Mickey is in a lot of ways known. Like we haven't got to see what Mickey can do
right
with a full off season and recruiting. We're getting to see Mickey, what I've been calling like the trial by fire. Like he's getting thrown in, man, go take a swing, right? That's where he's at. But he's a known quantity to us. He's one of our guys. Mickey is our guy. He's a Husker. Everything he's done so far has been, I think he's done well. Like he's done the right things, the right attitude. The kids love him. The coaches yes. think he's great. I mean, so those are good. But like Nebraska fans also come from a place where they've had unknowns. Bill Callahan, Mike Riley, these unknown coaches that get selected where it kind of threw us off kilter, you know, where we've had the Riley and the Callahan versus the Frost and Pelini, the knowns. We've had knowns. We love those hires. The other two hires, who's this guy? Who's Mike Riley? Most people were asking. I remember walking around hospitals. I'm walking around hospitals where for my job, and I'm going, and people are always talking Husker football. And when the Riley news broke, I mean, it went to 10 different hospitals and 10 different people would come up like, who is Mike Riley? You know, they're almost distraught. They don't know who he is.
Right.
And they're upset that they think we got to, you know, like that was the mindset. Callahan was a little bit more like, what do we make of this guy? Pro guy coming in. It was exciting, but scary. So I think that what you're saying is we don't have an obvious candidate. The obvious was like Frost Pelini.
Or Pelini because he had been the interim in the defense court.
He just won a national title. I mean, it was
right.
That was pretty obvious too. But Mickey is at least known, but he's never been like a head coach, though. So he's a known guy. He's not unknown, but he's not a – he hasn't been a head coach before. So this is his chance to be being a head coach.
But isn't it odd – on one way, Mickey's a known commodity, but on one hand, he has no track record as a head coach, though.
Yes.
So it's that's a weird feeling where it's like, well, people know him, but they don't know what he can do as a coach. There's a lot psychologically in there for people, I think.
It is. That's the part that I think, I don't know. I'm like you said, we don't have a slam dunk hire. That's where I'm stuck at. Like I look at, there's like four or five of these guys that all are seemingly like they're on kind of the same level.
Right.
I mean, I think there's Urban, who's obviously Urban. That's done. Yes, right.
Right.
But everybody else is like, they're at a certain tier. Like they've been good college coaches at a medium to upper level school. I mean, Kansas, yeah. I guess, is not
right.
Medium.
But I mean, Kansas, Iowa State, Baylor, Kansas State.
Yeah, whatever. Baylor. Like, and Baylor, I wouldn't put as an elite program, no. Even though they've won the Big 12. I just, they're not a powerhouse necessarily, right? So you got Matt Rhule, Aranda, you got
Leipold
and Matt Campbell seem to be the big names. I haven't really heard much outside of those four names.
I haven't really either. I mean, it seems like those are the dudes you hear most about.
Yeah. And they're all like, I'd be like, I don't know, they'd be upset with any of them.
I would. Isn't that weird? Like I would not be upset with any of those four names you just threw out there. At the same time, I don't know if I am like elated. No, I mean, cause I'd be excited. I guess
we don't know how to feel. And I think that's probably how most people are.
Right.
It's like when you don't have an obvious slam dunk known guy,
right.
It feels scary. It's like, gosh, who is it going to be?
Because right now, like one by one, like if this was Shark Tank and, you know, next into the tank, Matt Campbell is going to sell you on, and he came in and sold, I would be like, I want 100%. I'll pay $100,000. I don't even want any percent of the company. I want to, you keep it
on. Mr. Wonderful here, Matt Campbell. What would make me not squash you like the mid-level coach that you are? You know, like.
Yes, yes. But that's how it, I guess my point is like anybody could get on that carpet in front of me and pitch Matt Rhule, Dave Aranda, Lance Leipold, or Matt Campbell. And I bet by the end of the pitch, I'd be like, hell yeah, this is great.
The same way Mr. Wonderful wants to see. But I want to see sales. I'd be like,
give me wins.
Show me wins. What do you got? Wins. Tell me you got wins, Lance.
Here's how I'll do the deal. Classic royalty. You give me $1 per win in perpetuity. I give you the 100 grand. All I want is 2% equity. That's all I get. That's it.
That's all we want. That's all six we wins want. A year to eight wins plus bowl games every year.
That's it. That's all we want.
If you can guarantee me that, you got the deal.
You got the deal. But I would be easily sold on all those candidates. I think I would, like, yeah. Matt Campbell could come in. I'd be like, that guy, that's the guy. And then Lance Leipold could come in. I'd be like, that's the guy. And then Dave Aranda would come in. I'd be like, that's the guy.
I think we like them all and we don't love anybody
right.
yet.
Right, because I don't want to sit here and be like, I don't know if I want any of these guys, because then when one gets hired, people are like, I thought you said you didn't want them. No, I like, part of me wants them all, and I want to just like, I want to, you know, it's the appetizer sampler. It's like, you can't choose one, but like, I don't want the coach sampler.
Give me Dave Aranda's defense, plus Matt Campbell's attitude.
I want Lance Leipold's ability to build quickly.
Yeah.
And then I want, you know what I mean? Like, I want a little bit of all that. I want the coach sampler platter is pretty much what I want.
And they all got like a little bit of a sample size, but it's all like, we have 5 to 7 good years worth of sample.
Right. Right.
It's like, that's not bad, but
even on Shark Tank, it'd be like, what are your last 12 months in sales? So it's like, what are your last 12 months record? It's like, we're 3-3. It's like, ooh. Ooh. Why the dip? Ooh, why the dip?
Where did the dip come from? I always feel bad. I don't think anybody wants to work with Robert.
It's so, why does nobody want to work with him?
I don't know. I just think he's just, of all the sharks, you know, everybody else has, I think, like a bigger like name and network. And I think his never took off as much. They're like, yeah. Oh, thanks for the offer, Robert. And they're like, they look away. And he's like, I just offered you.
I want 250,000 10%, and he'll say that's what I offer you, and they'll be like, thanks, Robert. Anybody else?
Anybody else got one?
And they never. No one chooses Robert.
I know.
They just get stuck with Robert, which is too bad because I feel like he's my kind of guy. He's very excited.
When Cuban makes an offer,
it's over.
Everybody knows, like,
it's over.
They're taking
everybody Cuban. Wants Cuban.
They want Cuban.
And he knows it too.
And when,
he's
offer,
sitting there being quiet, he's like, I'm just listening. Yeah. You know, he's going to come in at the end and swoop up the
Sometimes
deals.
he goes after people.
Like, oh, he'll,
he puts people down.
Oh, like, he'll crush people. So
I'd wake up sweating at night. If I knew Cuban was like, not like, if, oh man, he'd give it to you. If you had to pitch him and you,
oh, if he doesn't stuff, believe it,
yeah.
It's like, oh,
it'd be a nightmare.
It'd be horrible. Some more Mickey thoughts. You ready?
Yeah.
I'm going to kind of walk you through some of this stuff. What is a more likely scenario? This is hard. I wrote the question yesterday and I don't even know the answer. More likely scenario. Mickey is the head coach next year, or Mickey isn't even on staff next year.
More likely?
What's the more likely scenario? I don't know. I'm asking, I've had 24 hours to think
this. There's no third Mickey is on the staff as the assistant head coach?
Well, no. Yeah, so, I'm going to go.
Oh, God. So it's head coach or broke?
Head coach or Mickey's out of here.
What are the
odds? I'm going to walk you through kind of where I'm going with this.
Walk me before I give an answer.
Okay.
Walk me.
Because I do wonder how Trev Alberts is handling the Mickey Joseph conversation with coaching candidates. Like, does Trev bring up Mickey in that, like, hey, Dave Aranda, how are you? Or Dave's maybe not the right, hey, Lance Leipold, or Matt Campbell, totally your call. Not sure if you were familiar with Mickey Joseph, but I would strongly urge you to keep him on staff. I think he'd be a great asset for you. It's not I and who you want on staff. That's your call. You're the head coach. I'm here to support you. But I think having Mickey around would be a really, really good thing. Like, I wonder if he's bringing that up to people. I wonder if these coaching candidates are curious about what that situation is, because I would think most head coaches view Mickey Joseph as an overwhelmingly positive thing and asset to your staff. But I also wonder if there are some head coaches that think, man, there could be a lot of people, players and fans, who wanted Mickey to be in the place that I am as a head coach. And I wonder if there are some head coaches that already have their main recruiter. They already got their guy. Like, I bet Lance Leipold has a guy. I bet Matt Campbell has a guy there needs to be trust. There needs to be a shared vision of talent evaluation. Like, I could also see some head coaches wanting a complete blank slate and wanting to have their recruiting guy come in.
Yeah, that is the argument against Mickey, is like, I just want all my own guys.
Yes.
I think
I want to come in and do this my way.
If is the mindset, I think that trumps being scared of Mickey. I think most coaches, my prediction is most coaches would not see Mickey as, this guy's just a too big of a threat. I think they'd see, that's an asset.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I'm just asking the question.
Like, if you got a recruiting, I want two.
Yes.
The one thing is, like, this is a game of recruiting. I mean, it was probably Mickey's number one selling point. Right? Why Joseph is like, the dude gets dude. Ace, Trey Palmer now is like the people that he brings are good. Like, he brings talent. He can recruit guys, and that's his number one, like, asset. So I think Trev is, from all things we've seen of Trev, he's pretty straightforward.
Yes.
I think he would recommend that. I think he will be the type to say, hey, you do what you want. You try to keep Mickey. Agreement right now in place. The agreement is that he would be
got a 3-year deal, associate head coach or whatever. So
he would explain that and sell the benefits of Mickey and in his short time, probably the most impactful recruiter we've seen in a while.
Yes,
since John Blake, the great John Blake, who came in, came in here and got Sue, Marlon Lucky, Barry Turner. Like, he came and brought talent.
Yes.
And that dude, he was a great recruiter. So I think Mickey, for most coaches, will seem it, he'll fall into the asset category.
Totally agree. So no, I completely agree with that. I know that there are some that may look at it and go, I want to, if I'm going to go do this, I want to bring in all of my people.
Bill Callahan was that.
Well, even Frost was that.
Frost
brought his entire staff.
Yeah.
Some people just want, they have their people they trust. They have their people they know. They have their people that know them. And they say, I just want to, like, would Matt Campbell want to take his operation in Ames and just put it in Lincoln? Would Lance Leipold want to? I don't know. I'm throwing out these.
Bo Pelini was sitting there. He was sitting there willing to be the defensive coordinator, had wild success. You know, every program in the Big 12 wanted to hire the guy, right? And Bill Callahan wanted his guys. He didn't want to deal with anybody hangover. I mean, he kept Turner Gill, actually. I'll say that.
Yes.
He did keep Turner Gill. But like he didn't Bo Pelini.
The good thing is that, and this is that Mickey, and I mean this in a kind way, Mickey's not a Frost guy in that, like, Mickey just got here.
Yeah.
It's not like Mickey's been with Frost for forever or anything like that. Like, so there's maybe some of that, but I think I would think most coaches, the number one thing they're looking for in assistant coaches outside of coordinators is recruiting. Like, just go get, I don't care that you are, again, outside of the coordinators, not to denigrate or downgrade or downplay how good of a position coach is, but I think what they want is, like, can you bring me players? If you bring us players, me, the coordinators, we'll be good. So I think in that regard, they would look at Mickey and be like, yes, you know, what's better than one recruiter? Two.
Yeah.
You know, but I just wonder what those conversations are like between Trev, potential candidates, how these candidates view a guy like Mickey. I think overwhelming majority of coaches probably view him as a positive thing. It's just, I'm thinking out loud here.
Yeah. It's fair. It's a fair thought, because it's a rare instance where it's so early. I mean, Nick, you usually don't fire coaches this early.
No.
So Mickey Joseph's getting like 3/4 of a season to test his head coaching skills and putting out his own resume. Like,
right.
I mean, who knows? I mean,
because I've even thought about one thing that maybe hasn't gotten.
What if he does well and somebody wants to hire him as a head coach? No,
what if he does well enough? Like, I am Tulane, or, you know, some school in that part of the, you
Louisiana
know, like,
State Louisiana, or like, whatever. Yeah, you name it, like
Louisiana Tech, whatever, like just something in that southeastern part of the country. Like, I'm watching this and I'm going, maybe we should go hire Mickey Joseph. So I've also thought, like, that's one part of all this that has not gotten talked about is, like, what if Mickey doesn't get the Nebraska job, but then he is offered a head coaching job at Tulane or somewhere else, or he could be the associate head coach at Nebraska. Well,
I think,
honestly, money's going to talk.
Money's going to talk. So it's hard if, you know, somebody says, we're going to give you $4 million, and Mickey's like, I'm see you later, guy.
Right.
But if it's like,
I bet
you're making
money, 1.5
or you're making $1 million here or something, like, he's going to get paid to stay here.
Yes. He's going to get seven figures to stay here is my guess.
I have no idea what he was making in his 3-year contract.
That's a good question.
And he gets a bump to be the head coach.
Yeah, he got a bump. So Mickey Joseph's this $600,000, Joseph will see a modest salary increase to his original $600,000.
But that's a non-coordinator position. So that is a $600,000 non-coordinator.
Right.
So that's a really good pay for a non-coordinator. And he's getting now.
So he's getting about you're going to pay him 650. Basically 600 is what it looks like.
Yeah.
So I mean, he's going to get, it's going to be close to $1 million here if he stays, even probably, as, But I just, that's one outcome of all this people have not talked about is, like, what if some other program, I'm not talking about like another Big Ten school. I'm talking about like a Conference USA, an AAC.
Those are the ones that he would have a, I think he's even needs to keep doing well through the rest of the year. Like, he needs to be basically like, to be a candidate there, you got to be borderline the guy Trev goes, ooh.
Right. Make it tough.
He's got to win more before. Otherwise, I don't think he becomes an obvious candidate for anybody yet. Just because, you know, this was his first go round.
Right.
But like I said, I think we're going to learn a lot in the next
three games
are the resume. I think it will seal the probably the path Trev's going to take. If we do well, really well, Mickey's writing the resume. If we just do average or below average, I think it's going to be harder for Trev to because I think he can keep Mickey potentially too. Can keep them both, that's where he has to weigh out what's the best thing for the pro. Maybe it's Mickey. It might be Mickey. Maybe it's as an assistant.
This is why. It's the next thing I wrote down. This is why right now my number one candidate is Dave Aranda. It's because of two reasons. Number one, Dave Aranda checks so many boxes of what I want in a coach. He's a defensive guy. Mm-hmm. He's got Big Ten ties. He's got now experience as a head coach. And then number two, I think the fact that Dave Aranda coached with Mickey Joseph at LSU, he knows him. He likely trusts Mickey. There's a relationship there. I think the best chance of a scenario. Now, I think most scenarios would probably end with Mickey staying on as an assistant. But the one that I think almost guarantees that Mickey stays is if it's Dave Aranda, because there's a relationship there, you know. But if it's someone like Matt Campbell, I don't know. But if it's Dave Aranda, I think you get the best of both worlds. For me right now, that would be, and listen, Mickey might kick ass for the final 2 months, and I'm going to be sitting here and saying, Mickey's the guy, let's go. But for me right now, on October 19th, Dave Aranda head coach, Mickey Joseph associate head coach, that's my number one thing.
Find an O coordinator.
Find an OC.
Dave Aranda will find his DC.
Find his DC, and then you're off and running. So that's my thought.
That's not a bad thought at all. I'm just pulling this up just to see. Baylor extends Dave Aranda's contract to 2029.
It's a private school, if I'm not mistaken. So it's hard to know exactly what schools don't have to, you know, it's like the Greg McDermott, Dana Altman, like you don't know.
Gotcha. So it says $6 million a year was what they
reported.
They reported his salary was. So 2029, what's the buyout? That means it's going to be a big buyout at $6 million a year.
It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard.
But Nebraska's got, I would say, reasonably deep pocketbooks if we really liked somebody, right? So that's going to be an interesting part of it too, because, you know, if that buyout's too big and if you got to pay somebody $9 million and you got
an $8 million a year or something like that. I mean,
a big old buyout on top of that. That's a whole nother. So I don't always know the exact language.
I don't either.
Sometimes in those buyouts, it's like they kind of have some weird clauses that make it easier. So I'd be curious what his is. What's Matt Campbell at? Do we know what he's making?
I did. I wrote it down at some point. I want to say he was around 3 or 4, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, Leipold and Campbell are going to be way more. He's $4 million with bonuses. I think Leipold's similar to that.
Leipold's like 2 to 3. Might even be like
3.5.
Oh, he's at 3 now?
No, 3.5 in the final year of his deal. 2.2 in 21. Yeah, it's going to escalate, but man, 2.2 in 21.
So I think
2.4 in 22.
To me, the number for this next head coach is around 8. 8 to 9.
I think you want to be with the big boys. I think you want to get a coach that's worth $8 million.
Right. $8 to $9 million is going to make everybody go,
yeah,
I'm going to think about this now. But those are just, I just had a few Mickey Joseph thoughts I wanted to fire off to you real quick.
Really good.
I don't know what to think of that. Okay. I got another thing that's going to, it might even be, I don't know where we're at. You have your black shirt in here somewhere, and I want to talk about that. But before we do that, Quick time out to tell you about Go Currency. Yes. Does your business need easy, competitive financing for trucks or equipment? Currency is here to help. Currency specializes in finding the best available rates and terms for construction equipment, farm machinery, trucks, and trailers. In fact, customers can get loans for up to $500,000 with little or no money down and terms for up to 72 months. Currency can also help if you're getting serious about buying a new or used motorhome, fifth wheel, or utility vehicle. Just fill in an application and the Currency finance team will get to work finding a lender with the most competitive options. It's quick, secure, and free to use. Currency is equipment financing made simple. Visit GoCurrency.com for details. Offers may vary and arranged by Express Tech Financing, LLC, DBA Currency, pursuant to CFL License 60DBO. -54873. Don't know. We got to do the legal disclaimer, Bo. We got to make sure we're always doing that.
I like when we read them really like.
I know. You can't even hear some of the stuff that people.
Some of those commercials with, you know, they're like, try this pill and you'll go from sad to happy. It's like, no, you won't. You're gonna die. You're gonna jump out of a building. Don't die, and you might end up. Crap in your pants. And
I think it's your stand-up joke. A lot of like the side effects for certain pills are worse than what you're taking the pill for.
Yeah, it's like, and after you do this, you get a bloody nose and possible chance of seizing up and
skull could explode. You could die on the second you swallow the pill.
Bloody eyes, bloody stool. Bloody eyes, bloody stool.
Okay.
Seeing ghosts.
You may see ghosts, go crazy, end up in a mental institution, and go to jail for the rest of your life. Get the pill. Dial 1-800. Get the pill.
Oh, yeah.
The black shirts. Tom Chattel wrote about this.
Oh, yeah.
He basically was like, the black shirts should be put on the shelf for a year, maybe three. There's even been, I was listening to Sam McEwen and Dirk and Tom talk about it on their podcast of like, this next head coach should be offered the ability or the freedom to do whatever he wants to do with certain traditions. Like if you want to do away with the tunnel walk, they should be able to do whatever they want. If you want to do away with whatever, you should be able to do whatever you want.
Oh, this is
so I'm
mistakes.
Well, okay. This is talking to a former black shirt, and there is not a family on earth more. There cannot be a family that has four black shirts. John, Tom, Bo, Barrett. There cannot be a family on earth that has four black shirts.
I got to ask Michael John. I don't know if Michael John for sure had one.
Did he not have one?
I don't know if he had one.
I assumed he had one. Maybe he didn't.
I figured
when he KO'd the guy.
Oh,
a black shirt was waiting for him.
Like, because I don't know if he was ever the starter on defense. He was a backup for sure. John Rood has the biggest hit in college football history. He is a black shirt.
Even if he's an honorary black shirt.
Even if he didn't get it, like, he is known as a black shirt because the dude is Husker legend for that reason. Right.
But so, I bring this up so I know that this is a sensitive issue of your family. Where do you come out on it? Because it is a weird state of affairs with the black shirts. Because I will say, if someone said, what's your favorite Nebraska football tradition? I would say it's the black shirts. The black shirts is my favorite tradition.
Yeah. So to me, their talking point was we should let the coaches do whatever they want to do. I completely disagree with it. The tunnel walk, the black shirts. Those are things
untouchable.
They're bigger than a single coach. You know what I mean? Like when I talk about traditions to us, like that's things that we care about. They're bigger than a single coach. They're bigger than a single player. All the guys that have come before, all the work and the blood, sweat, and tears, all that stuff.
Right.
That the guys before you do, that's what the black shirts stand for, right? So it's not about a coach coming in and saying, well, I don't really know about this or care about this. It's bigger than that. Like that's the part of it that's part of the institution, part of the tradition that you just go, no, that's always going to be there. That's above somebody's personal preference. Like, because too many people and laid it down for that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh yeah.
That's the part that I would totally disagree with. Like, in some rough years, like maybe we have entered high again where it's hard.
Right.
And that's what I think. You don't just give them to give them. Like, they're earned. And when the performance isn't there, yeah, maybe you don't get to have them, right? So that's fine. I'm fine with that. Like, right. Got to earn them.
I just,
but when they're earned, like they need to be there to be earned, right? You can't say, oh, like, they need to be. It's in its own thing. It's a special thing. No other program earns own like defensive thing. Their own,
right?
It's our own thing. You know, it's like its own brand. It's its own universe within itself.
I think I'm with you in that, like, I think this is untouchable. Like, you gotta keep the black shirts tradition alive. But if I had to like argue against it, it's like, look at us. We're already like, as a head coach, you have a million things to figure out. And this would be one thing, like, how are we, like, the black shirts, unfortunately, has just become a thing. Like, I mean, it was the whole Schick and Nick bit we did where we created the black shirts robot, a bomb defusing robot would come in, ask Bo Pelini, when are you handing out the black shirts? And then Bo Pelini would take a machine gun and shoot it.
Damn, shoot it, robot. You know?
Because Bo used to get so...
What did you ask me?
Bo Pelini, when were you handing out the black shirts? But that's, it's become a running joke in a bad way. Of like, when are the black shirts handing out? When, who has a black shirt? Who, like,
but see, that's probably one of my biggest gripes with Pelini is I don't think he really embraced
I don't think he loved the black
shirts. And I love Pelini.
Right.
But he never embraced it. He handed out 20 of them sometimes, and you just be like, the purists out here, it's like he was doing that. We're like,
Right.
And all he's a defensive guy. Everybody's got a mic. You know, one mic.
Yeah.
Like, starters get the black shirts. Okay. And we have packages now. Okay. So if we have 13, like one extra D lineman, one extra corner.
Right.
Like that, like sometimes we don't know who the starter is.
Johnson would have gotten the black shirts.
Vinny Johnson comes off the bench. And bizarre fact about Vinny Johnson, I just found out. He's one of the richest athletes in the world. And I
when
was
did that
like,
happen?
Well, the microwave must have said, I got a little money. I'm going to microwave it to a lot of money.
That is amazing.
But I couldn't believe it. Vinny Johnson.
Yes, I saw that too. I don't know where I saw
unreal.
That.
Unreal.
That is crazy. Google
great,
Vinny Johnson.
Great job, Vinny Johnson, saving that six man money and putting it to work.
Yes.
Good work, Vinny. Yes. But yeah, like, I'd rather see like on this defense. You want to say it's the starters, but I think it's standards. Like, it's the guys that meet the standard, which means there might only be a couple. I mean, the Ultimate Warrior, he's getting a black shirt. He has met the standard this year. But, like, you know, like, there's a lot of guys out there else has met. You'd really struggle to find, like, three to five real black
shirts. But here's the hard part, though, about that is... And again, I'm just arguing.
That's okay. This is good.
Like, here's the problem with that is nobody's up to the standard. They've given up 600 yards twice. Who the fuck is up to the standard?
Well, and
football should be the almost ultimate, like 11 is one. Nobody's different. We win together. We lose together. No, like, I'm with you. Like, Garrett Nelson himself, I think, has played well, but it's like, he's out there and he's getting torched.
Well, here's what I'd say. The defense is
getting torched.
Like, here's what I'd say is like, typically, it's the starters get them, right? Yes.
That's how it was.
We've been historically bad in some of these years.
That's the hard part about this.
Historically bad, then you take them all away. Fine. What I don't think is good is it like, one week you get them, you played bad, you take them away.
I don't like that at all.
I'm more like,
you
show us what the black shirts are, and then you kind of are that. When you lose, you have good games, you have bad games, but you've kind of proven that we hold a standard. Like, you have to get back to that. So that's the part that I totally agree. We can, you know, I just don't love the incentive to play good this week is you get them back. I don't really think that way.
Or if you lose the game, I'm with you. Like, I'm not a huge fan of the week to week.
I don't care how many it does because you gave up 600 yards. You don't get it again. Like, that's not really the way it works in my mind. In my mind, it's like
It's every a process practice, thing.
It's an attitude.
Yeah.
It's years of work that earn the black shirt. I mean, usually takes years. You know, like I was lucky enough to get it early, and that was 3 years. It took 3 years, and I was finally a starter, and I got my first. And it was like you couldn't believe it, but it was years of work, years of doing everything right for years every day.
Right.
That's how you get a black shirt. Not like you came in, you're a starter. Like that's the bad way to earn a black shirt.
I know.
The good way is you might be the fifth year dude that's grinded out like a walk-on from Cozad, Nebraska, like Jared, you know,
Crick. Yeah.
And then you earn your way up. Right. So,
I just don't know what the right way is to handle it, because like, I agree with everything you're saying, but I think so then is the only way to get a black shirt is leading up to the season. Like once the games start, are we not going to do the whole,
I guess for me, it was always more obvious. Does that make sense?
I agree. I know that because that's what's hard. Because what Chattel wrote about is
you
like,
don't get one
with the black shirts. Like when I think of a black shirt, like, you know, it used to represent like a standard of excellence, a toughness, a mindset. Yeah. Like there was a real thing. Unfortunately, like, I don't know if that's how it's viewed now. And so I don't know what the right way to.
So this is, I just thought of this. Tell me what you think of this. There's the defense. You play for the defense.
Yep.
You're a starter. You're a black shirt. You can be a starter and not be a black shirt.
Yes.
There is a difference.
Yes.
So to me, like, that is the level above just like, I'm one of the starting team. Like, it represents something bigger. It's something earned and it is known throughout the team. It's not a coach saying, you get to be a black shirt. It's everybody knows that's a black shirt. And that is the way I think about it. So sometimes I see guys, I go, I don't know if that guy.
Yeah, if you have to question that. It,
like, he is a starter, but is he a black shirt? Because that's how I see it.
And so would you say if that's the case, you can't lose your black, like if you, because I think we both are in agreement. I don't love this week to week thing of like losing your black shirt. Is it one of those things, once you get it, can you lose it in the season?
If you've dropped your standard, like to me, the difference isn't like you get beat, you lose it, or you gave up too many yards, use it.
Right.
Like if the things that got you from starter to black shirt, if you're not doing those things week to week, if you're not practicing hard, studying, being tough, physical, like willing to do anything, you're not a team guy, like all those things that make the black shirts. Yeah. You can lose a black shirt. You can drop your standard and we can say,
right.
Yeah. That's how I see it. Like I
agree with
starters
you, by the way.
And black shirts aren't the same thing.
I'm just wondering, like, I'm wondering the perfect way to handle it. And it's just I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I'd be surprised if it ever fully goes away, especially with Trev being a former black shirt.
It ain't going away with Trev.
But black shirt. Trev, I don't know. It's
that's why it's so good to have Trev there. Is like, he'll
know how to handle that kind of stuff.
He's not letting that go.
But by the way, okay. So you brought up the Big Red Breakfast, and it was something I wanted to ask. I've had this topic written down for a couple of weeks and I've never gotten to it. How do you view like Big Red Breakfast? You, Jay Moore there, big crowd of people, two former players, two former black shirts. Like you're talking to the masses as former players. The Nick Bob Podcast is powered by Runza. You know, there are a lot of ways to greet someone. Hey, hi, hello, what's up? Another way is, what's popping? Well, here's the thing. That greeting has taken on a new meaning now because the answer to what's popping is now Runza's new popcorn chicken. That's what's popping. Runza's new popcorn chicken is amazing. Little, bite-sized, delicious all white meat chicken that make any day better immediately. I love them. My wife loves them. My kids cannot get enough. 2-year-old Mac, 6-year-old Mava are constantly wanting to get it popping. Great for a snack, great for a meal. Pair them with the best crinkle fries on planet Earth, and you are set. All I got to say is you need to get out to a Runza location nearest you and get it popping. What's so hard to understand about that? Get it popping with Runza's all-new popcorn chicken. Runza makes it all better. Well, I think right now we're kind of talking about all the ancillary things around a program. And what do you think the role, how do you view your role as a former player in the way you publicly and even privately go about talking about the program, supporting the program, constructively criticizing the program? Because like there is that's a thing around here, because there's a lot of the former players have a lot of influence. There's a ton of former players that have their roots here. They're still around here. A lot of them have platforms. A lot of them have radio shows. A lot of them have podcasts here. Like, how do you view that?
Well, I don't really think of myself as like a media member, which I've never thought that way. I just think
I don't really view you as
I'm just a guy that.
But you, I mean, you're on this podcast every week.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like you, if you wanted to, you could turn on the mic and rip.
Yeah.
You could also turn on the mic and it could be sunshine and rainbows all the time.
Yeah.
Like, where it's an interesting, because it's been a thing that's gotten that can get tricky. And it seems like once you lose the former player as a coach, like you better have those guys behind you. Cause man, they really can shape public opinion in a big way.
Yeah. I don't know if, I mean, I guess just speaking for myself, like I grew up a Husker fan. I think of myself as a Husker fan, right?
You almost identify with yourself as that first before, are you Bo Rude quote Husker fan and former player? Or do you think you're as yourself as Bo Rude, former player and Husker fan? Does that make sense? Like what comes first? Cause I think that's an important distinction for
I think you feel like a player, the closer you are to when you were playing, the farther you get away, the more you go back to like
a fan,
the thing you were as a kid, you love that, you love the program. So I try to think of it more as that. Like, I love the program. I'm a Husker fan, will be for life. You know, so like, I think the beauty of this podcast, what we do is we just have the same conversations we always have, right? Yes. So like, I think sometimes when people can think of themselves as media members, they need hot takes or they need to be controversial or, you know, either overly critical or overly supportive. Almost like blindly supportive. And I think we always just try to keep it like,
I feel like we keep it real. I think there's some people that probably think we are too kind to the program.
You know this, like even in our private conversations, I defend the program.
Really, really, really defend the program.
If I see something wrong, I mean, I'm not going to pretend it's not, but like, if it's not obvious, I default to, you should defend the program and do what's best for the program, right? So that's the way I think about it. But I never want to pretend something is not, right? So I don't know. I just always I always think positively about the program, and I always want to, you know, view it in the best light you can and be fair. I always think it's tough. Like sometimes, you know, we joke about things, but I try not to like blast some of these kids. Like, these are kids. Like,
yes,
there's no reason to like pick a fight about an 18-year-old kid. You know, it's fun to, you know, sometimes we got to point things out and we like to make our jokes, and we're going to make our jokes.
We're not
going to beat up a kid.
No,
it's just like, dude, you're 20. Like, so
but we'll also say like, hey, so-and-so didn't play well, or so-and-so's got to play better.
That's fair.
Yes. That's like, to me, that's,
and we do
you can't
that.
Do this job. You can't do this. You can't have a real conversation about a team if you can't point out someone, hey, this guy didn't play good.
Yeah, but I think the line you don't want to cross is like, what you shouldn't do at any point in your life,
right,
whether you're on the media or you're walking down the street, is like make it personal about a kid. Like, that's where you don't do that either, Nick.
No.
You never do that.
No.
And that's a great habit that you never make it personal. You go, look, that guy didn't play good.
Yeah.
And we got to talk about that.
Yes.
Like, that is a big part of what's going on or something. Like, that's part of every discussion people are having, and there's no reason to stay away from it. It's just like some people, they take it to this weird place where they're like personally hurt by somebody. Like,
right. But it's just, they get offended by, there's some players that get on Twitter and they like project this, like they are really, really offended.
Yeah.
by how what's happening on a football field. And it's an interesting, it's really interesting to watch the different, I follow a lot of them on Twitter, a lot of the different Husker former Husker players and how they go about discussing the program.
Yeah.
It's hard because I'm, first of all, Creighton basketball is not near as big as Husker football. Kansas basketball, I don't have that sort of like, that's a different thing in and of itself. Like, but I'm, it's tough because like Bill Self's still there. So it's like the guy I played for, like, of course I'm going to support the hell out of him. And oh, by the way, he's like putting together basically it's the most unassailable resume, not named John Wooden or Coach K. Like, yeah. I mean, it's fucking nuts what that guy's doing. And then, you know, there's been one coach. I played for Dane Altman, but then like a lot of the same people that were there were around, and Greg McDermott's been there for over a decade now. Like, so I think that more coaches you get removed as a player, the easier it is to criticize.
Oh yeah.
And the more you're not around the team, the easier it is to criticize.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Because it is a thing. I mean, there's a ton of former Husker influence. Mm-hmm. I wonder if is that how it is? You think in like Tuscaloosa and in Norman, Oklahoma, and
the big blue blood type schools, those would be ones. I mean, I'm sure you got Michigan, Ohio State. Yeah. I mean, all the like top 25 programs in history, Notre Dame, I mean, they all have
this former type player. Of thing, former player.
Oh yeah, for sure. I would think so. I think it's when you start getting down the line past that, there's a lot less people that are like vocal in.
Right.
I mean, Nick, the reason why Nebraska special is because millions of people care.
Right.
And hundreds of former players very much, you know, like hundreds and thousands of foreign players care. Right. So
It's an interesting thing on, you know, because I think a part of the reason that Bill Callahan fell out of the graces for a lot of people wasn't just the fact that he was losing, but it was like, I think there were some people that felt like he didn't open the doors for former players as well. No. And that became a thing. Like, it's like almost how you treat the coach, whoever this next coach is, it's like how he treats the former players is like that. That matters. But I kind of feel like, damn, I would never, like, let's say Greg McDermott retires, they hire someone new at Creighton. I would never want this new coach to feel like, you better treat and Josh Doetzler and Anthony Tolliver way.
Here's what's weird. I never really understood that either. Like, what do they mean by that? I can only speak this because I know, like, I went to a couple events where they had like former player events at Nebraska. I was going to take you to one actually.
Yeah.
With you and your dad. But
right.
Like, they'd have barbecues and the former players would go, and it was fun. You got to hang with the coaches, and they did a good job of that. I think if that's what they mean, like doing a barbecue every fall, but like, you know, I think they'll let you go to like check out a practice and stuff.
Right.
And maybe Callahan closed that off. But like, I also, Nick, I don't assume that I should get anything. That's how I am.
That's how I am.
I don't think anybody owes me anything. I don't want anything. You won't hear me saying that.
Right.
You won't hear me saying that this staff didn't open the doors to foreign players. I'm like, what do they owe me?
That's more where I fall. Like, I could never imagine a new head coach at Creighton and like, I think that person needs to like, that guy owes me something.
I don't really know what that means.
I don't know what that, like, I hope, like, I think with that said, I do think it's important to have keep your former players. Like, I think the more you, like, I used to love when former Kansas players and Creighton players would be around. Like, I think that's special. I'm not saying, but like, you get into a tricky spot.
So what I would say for former coaches, or for new coaches that aren't like a Frost,
have a connection. Yeah.
Or like a Mickey Joseph. They understand how things work. Trev understands how things work, right? So Trev is an athletic director.
Is huge because Trev can help. Like,
Nick, Trev solves that problem a lot of essentially. Yes. Where if you don't know why the black shirts matters as a coach, that's a problem for you.
Yeah.
And if you don't have Trev there, nobody's going to tell you that. If you don't have former players around to kind of like, not only explain it, but they get to like help infuse it. Like yes. you infuse, why does it matter? Well, there's 1,000 guys that did this before you that are like, they went through it and they had a lot of success with a certain kind of attitude and standard. Like that is what helps a program. Now, if a coach doesn't see that, that's a problem because they're missing a chance to really have something special.
Yes.
And that is why the only reason why you would want former players around a lot is because it helps.
Yes.
And so yeah. I think that's maybe what they mean is like, you're doing yourself a disservice by not bringing the culture of like the thing we've built here. You
right.
know?
And I mean, like, I don't necessarily feel like Creighton basketball owes me anything, but I also don't want to be like, you don't want to get shut out either. You know, there's just a balance there.
What's the point of having traditions and like it's to bring people back and bring the, like the future and the past yes. together. Like, so that's
it's,
the point.
It's an interesting, it's,
but there's no entitlement to me. Like there's no, I don't feel you owe me, like me personally,
like Dave Aranda's hired. What does Dave Aranda realistically owe? Like you
zero doesn't need to call me or ask me anything. Doesn't need, I don't expect anything. Now, Dave Aranda was smart. He'd say, man, I want to learn more about tradition. I want my players, these guys from around the country right. to get to be around the old dudes.
Yes.
So he would try to incorporate it because it would help bridge the gap of those traditions.
Because and, I do think that's, I'm not yeah. trying to say that former players don't matter, because they, I think they do. Like, I think it's important. One of my prevailing motivations when I was playing at Kansas and Creighton was to not let down the guys that came before me. And that's I mean it. That in all sincerity.
That's the line there. That's it.
Like that's I did not want to ever have to look at some of these former guys and be like, man, we fucked it up, man. Like
that's it though.
And so, and, but the only way you really gain that is if you get around them. And if so I, don't, so it's weird yeah. balance. Like they matter. But that's a two, it's a, it, it's a tricky thing to kind of balance. And I think it's become a thing around here too, that has been tough to kind of maybe manage for certain coaches. Cause I think yeah. in a weird way, I think a lot of people thought Frost would help solve that issue, but I think Frost and his polarization amongst former players, like he, that's that was more of an issue to a, in a bad way than I anticipated yeah. it, even though everybody remembers the amazing scene when he gets hired, he goes down to the weight room and all the former players are there, you know, like
if he would have won a lot early.
Right. right.
I think people would have come around. The people that were against him would have probably, I think lightened up probably just cause like they would have been happy for success. I think it's hard though. If you kind of aren't never have saw eye right. to eye before and then you lose a lot, you've lost them.
Yes. Yes.
So, and you know what? Hey, what can you say? He didn't win. So
yeah. So it, when you don't win, nothing's going to go well.
When you don't win, it's like you can't. Yeah, you're not going to bridge any gaps.
No. The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors, and I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. And if you go into Pella's website right now, you look at it, and how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of windows or doors. By Pella, won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. That's big time stuff right there. And they achieved that in a couple of ways. They got insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. They got types of low E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. They got triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all of that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for window and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella Windows and Doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. Two more things. Like, where are you at real quick with this final five-game stretch? Because the scary thing is Nebraska is going to be playing, as of right now, 4 of the top 10 total defenses in the country. Illinois is number 1 in total defense. Ooh. Michigan, number 4. Minnesota, number 6. Iowa's number 7. And Wisconsin, by the way, is number 23. So, like, it's a little scary. Because if we, I thought about going Debbie Downer for a second. Like, if we just stop and take a step back, like, Nebraska didn't look very good against Rutgers. Like that looked like two teams on the struggle bus. And then outside of a few bombs to Trey Palmer, the run game was bad. The defense struggled at Purdue. And all of a sudden, you're going to be playing better defenses. Like, where are you? I guess just give me your, you can take it wherever you want to take it. Where are you at with these final five games? Are you feeling confident? Are you
not confident?
No, I'm not either. Like, I'm a little nervous about how these final five games could unfold here.
Here's what I think is actually good. If I could say, like, what's a positive about these last five games? One, we get a bye week, which we need so badly for a million reasons. The biggest are health, and two, we're giving these new coaches another week to just
back to catch fundamentals, their breath and look.
Yes. We're you know, putting in new defensive things, putting in new like ideas. Like, it takes time. It was probably on the fly, a little rushed. Another bye week to sort of, okay, let's settle down, reassess, make more adjustments, because they're going to need to make more adjustments, especially defensively, offensively, for the run game, hopefully, so we don't just have to throw bombs to Trey Palmer every play.
Right.
So that's probably the first positive is the bye week. Second positive is we play Illinois at home, and they're ranked. In my mind, they're riding high right now.
Oh yeah. Who does Illinois play this week? By the way, I'll check that out, but keep talking.
Check out who they play. Cause I just, you know, the competitor in me, I smell a team that is ripe to be smacked. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
They haven't been in the top 25 very often.
No.
They think they're pretty good. You know, I mean, that's where I'd want them.
Oh, they got to buy. Shoot.
They got to buy too? Dang it.
Yes.
Okay.
But a buy also affords you the opportunity for 2 weeks to drink relax. Your own Kool-Aid or either relax or get drunk on your own. Like, I guarantee you, Bielema and those guys are probably... I would think as a coach, now you got to know your team. They might just be a bunch of grinders, but Bielema and those guys might have to be like chopping them down. Like, listen, man, you guys think you're hot shit right now, blah, blah, blah. Like, either way, sometimes you have 2 weeks to read your own press clippings and drink your own Kool-Aid.
True. I think the bad part is it gives those coaches 2 weeks to see our pretty quickly put together scheme.
But your point remains the same, though. This is a program that is not typically in this spot. Nebraska is at home.
At home. They're playing great right now. I watched them play Minnesota. Like, they're playing really good. They're tough. They're smart. They're doing all the things right. Their running back's really good. I think that Chase Brown's really good player.
Right.
So can we stop the run? Can we score points on this defense that's shutting down everybody? Those are the two questions for us going into that week. But to be able to have a ranked team at home that's not like Oklahoma's just more talented,
or Michigan or Ohio Michigan. State.
Yeah, like those teams are like another level of talent. This team is not another level of talent. They might be playing way better football than us, but that doesn't mean they're not beatable.
Yes.
And so to me, I see this as the competitor in me is going, they're ripe. They're ripe to be chopped down.
I agree. I think you mentioned you brought up the run game. Like, I think as much as anything that needs to get figured out is Mickey Joseph, Whipple, they got to figure out some way to run the ball a little bit.
Yeah,
because Anthony Grant went for over 100 yards in four of the first five games. He hasn't sniffed that since. He hasn't gotten over 50 yards in the last two games. And one thing I was thinking about. Well, how about this? Mitch Sherman had this tweet today. The Nebraska defense is facing, on average, 80 plays per game. The national average is 68. So they're leading the country in plays faced.
Yeah.
And so is one of the solutions, and I get that you're tipping yourself off, is one of the solutions playing like finding a package for Purdy or Smothers where he comes in and they can utilize quarterback run game? just to give you, because the reason I brought up that plays per game is a lot of people think that that's, it's twofold. It's the defense is getting tired. And so the offense needs to stay on the field a little bit. They need to chew. They need to control the ball a little bit here.
Yeah.
I don't know what, cause
yeah, I mean, we've been dictated to too often this year where they're holding the ball and they're getting leads. Two things that we're not good enough right now to play like that. Like, we're just not good enough on defense to not have a lead and to be out there all day. Simple as that. It's simple as the more time this defense is out there, bad things are going to happen. So as a team, we got to find a strategy to probably make it easier on them,
right?
Which means you got to sacrifice maybe the way you'd like to always play, to just like, you got to find a way to run the ball. You got to hold the ball. Sometimes it's little chunk plays instead of like, you know, we're going for the, you know,
you never want to criticize.
I know
that's what's there, hard,
but like, you can do both. Like, you can chunk away and then take a shot. You just can't have three and out with right. like all air it out. Like, you got to be able to run the ball and tick that clock. When you run the ball, even if you get three, like, the clock runs. That means their team doesn't get that extra three plays or
right.
five plays every
right.
quarter.
Yeah. Right.
So every quarter, if they get an extra five plays because we are throwing incomplete, like, then at the end of the game, that's 20 extra plays. So instead of 60 plays, you do 80. And guess how many tackles you missed in those 20 extra plays?
Right.
Five, and they gave up three touchdowns.
No, exactly.
That stuff adds up. You got to think big. You got to think about the game. One game, win the game at the end. How you get there, you got to think about the whole thing. Do all the things right throughout.
Totally agree. And that's why I think, as much as anything else in this bye week, I think this conundrum, figuring out how they're, now again, the way this offense is going to score the ball is bombs, deep bombs, probably to Palmer. That's how they're going to move the ball and score.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that has to be what you do on every play, you know, and I'm not insinuating that it's what they do, but at the same time, they got to figure out some, you know, they only ran 52 plays against Purdue. Got to figure out a way to manufacture some rushing attack.
I'm going to pull up here the 2022 cumulative stats for the season so far. Let's see where we're at here. Okay, so let's see. We've had, is that points? We need to see attempts. Total plays.
Are you trying to go the run-pass ratio? Yeah,
run-pass ratio. Well, let's see what we got here, because I'd love to see where we're at now. I mean, I feel like we started.
You know what's hard is a sack counted as a run?
I believe so.
So we maybe, because you almost need to subtract some of the sacks too.
Okay, rushing, let's see, attempts, 267. Passes, attempts, 221. So we've been balanced. I would say, though, the first part of the year, we were running it
way more.
So Grant got a lot of carries. So, I mean, Whipple is, quote unquote, staying balanced. I think, though, the balance comes is all over the place. It's like,
yes,
we'll go two quarters and it feels like we don't run the ball. And then at the end of the game, we might run it for the whole fourth quarter. Like, I think we need to find more balance to start the game off.
Right.
That makes sense. Like, yeah, can we start the game and be balanced versus like, we're kind of all over the place
today. It just is interesting. It's even possible for this group to run the ball. That's why I brought up I'm not usually a fan of like rotating quarterbacks in and tipping your hand of, okay, here comes some others, you know, they're running the ball. But at the same time, like, if their run game continues to be what it has been in the last couple of games, this thing's could get out of control.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially because you're playing now better defenses. And
they'll get you off the field even quicker.
Yes. So, yeah, I don't know. Don't want to be Debbie Downer, because Nebraska, I mean, they were good. They did what they needed to do in the second half against Indiana and Rutgers. But let's be honest, it was not a pretty football game at Rutgers. And again, I think a part of the reason people felt better about the Purdue game was like the Trey Palmer second half was so exuberantly exciting that it overshadowed a lot of the problems that were really, really scary.
I'm still like, I think we're still digesting the
magnitude.
We lost But Trey Palmer was amazing. So the next day, I'm still amazed. Like, people were positive. They came out of it like praising Mickey Joseph in a loss. And yeah, I think it's all has to do with like Trey Palmer was amazing. Like,
maybe it was, I think it's Trey Palmer's amazing.
Yeah.
It's also just not Frost. And there wasn't that Sideshow Bob step on a rake moment that lost the game. Like, there wasn't a huge, or even a coaching blunder that lost the game.
Not really at all.
But I ask people, like, that game plays out exactly how it was, but Scott Frost is the head coach. Highly doubt people are feeling as good about it as they are. And so that's what I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer, but I also want people to try to strip emotion away from it and just see the game for what it was. See the last couple games. I'm a little concerned about these final five game stretch, this final five game stretch. But with like a lot of these teams, like Iowa, not great. Minnesota has come back down to earth a little bit. Wisconsin.
Yeah.
They're going through it.
Let me ask you something. Does Ibrahim look like his old self?
No, I don't think so.
Because he got hurt, and I don't know if he's the same guy. Which is too bad because he was a really good player. But it's not bad for us.
No.
But Wisconsin, Iowa, it's a little bit harder for them to score the ball right now. Like,
you have an Illinois. Your three home games are all like.
Nick,
I don't know. You could convince me Nebraska loses by two touchdowns to all three teams. You could also convince me that Nebraska's right in all those games and could win all three of those games.
Yeah.
I don't know. They need to get their linebackers healthy. That's also this week. Those guys, some of the dudes that are banged up, got to get healthy for the final five games of this season.
We got to have Reimer back. We got to have Vokolek healthy.
Got to get Henrich back out there.
Yeah.
You got to get those guys feeling good.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right. We're 90 minutes in. Bye week.
That's an hour and a half on the line
fast. Yeah. How about that? Do you need a break from football this weekend like you did in the first bye week? Or are you going to try and watch some football?
I may watch a little bit.
I don't know. And scout out some opponent, some Baylor. You can maybe get your Baylor game right.
I need to check out Aranda. I need to see what Aranda's working with. You know,
you could get your Baylor game right. You could get your. I think Kansas might be off. Baylor plays Texas Tech. You know, like, I mean, you could. Mm-hmm. You could. No, they're off. Baylor's off this weekend. Baylor plays Texas Tech in 2 weeks. Everybody's got to buy in the same week. It's ridiculous. Right,
you'll be.
I'm going to AZ. Skies, oh, I'm pumped, man. I'm getting a little getaway. Try to do this every fall before basketball season starts and the grind hits.
Are you get away with go to the thing where you play like board games in your room again?
Yeah, we play Yahtzee.
We
play Yahtzee every night.
Go to the pool all day,
and Yahtzee then we play Yahtzee at night. It's an amazing trip. I don't care what anybody says. We bought travel size Yahtzee. It's gonna be amazing.
That sounds perfect.
We played Yahtzee on a bachelor party. Let me tell you, it was a crazy bachelor party. Shouts out to our friend Goldie.
Guess who won? I still have the belt.
And was your whole strategy to go for nothing but Yahtzees?
I don't even remember.
I thought you had some off the beaten path strategy.
Is there a strategy to Yahtzee?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's kind of there is a little bit of like, I'm going to go for my three of a kind. I need my fours. I need to get the bonus up top.
I know it's a simple game, but like you're rolling dice.
There's more strategy than you think.
I just remember, Nick, I was yelling Yahtzee a lot.
You did. I know. You were the Yahtzee champ. Well, I'm going to be the Yahtzee champ this weekend. So, okay. Well, no, we don't have a game to recap. So we'll be back next week with a wine pot or a coffee pot or something. And then we're hitting that final five game stretch. All right.
Okay.
You want to go listen to some Hall & Oates?
I think we should.
Let's do it.